After decades of conflict and endemic poverty, millions of Afghans continue to suffer, but none more so than the country's children. Over 2 million of them are said to be orphans. These children either live with extended family members or on the streets, subject to hunger, abuse, and poor health. Some are taken into orphanages, which, for the most part, operate on very limited resources. Natalie Carney visited some of the orphanages in the capital, Kabul, to have a look at the conditions many of Afghanistan's forgotten children live in.
So these are your kids, eh?
Yeah, pretty much. These are my little brothers and sisters. I think around 67 people altogether.
Paiman Sadiq is an Afghan-American who returned to his native country a year earlier to help its underprivileged children. He introduced me to Kufa Orphanage on the outskirts of Kabul in September of 2009. He was doing what he could to improve the situation for about 60 boys and girls stranded in this desperate facility.
This is Mirwais. Mirwais is actually the director of the facility.
Please.
Mirwais, a thin man, probably in his late 20s, lives with the children at the orphanage. He guides us down a long, dark hallway, lit only by intermittent rays spilling through the cracks in the wall.
The power?
Paiman asks Mirwais about the electricity.
Still the same problem?
Yes.
So unfortunately, the facility is left without electricity, mainly because we have a power bill of $24,000 that they were hit up with. Unfortunately, that impacts several aspects as far as studying at nighttime, being able to give the kids nutritional meals.
And keeping warm in the frigid temperatures of Afghanistan's winters.
This is one of the rooms that the kids are in.
Four thin mattresses lie in each corner of the room. In its middle, there's a dirty, spoiled carpet. On the walls, layers of old paint are peeling off. In some of the rooms, the windows have no glass. Two shy 10-year-old boys stand in the corner of the room.
You see the facility is in much need of repair. We actually priced repainting and rebuilding the facility, and it came over $12,000. That's a little bit more than what we can get, and if we cut anything else out, it'll be actually impacting their budget as far as food and other supplies that they need.
Back in the hallway, a dirty stainless steel metal sink sits randomly against the wall. Both taps run cold, ice cold, and it's constantly dripping. A curious young boy in a white shalwar kameez that's a couple size too big for him peeks his head out from around a doorway. After a few seconds, he peels his fingers from his mouth and smiles at me. Paiman then opens another door to what I thought was going to be another bedroom, until a choking stench struck me. It was like none I had ever smelt.
These are actually the bathrooms right here. As you can see, missing sinks.
It's pitch dark, but I can faintly make out the holes in the ground that are meant to be the toilets.
There's an odor too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sanitary conditions is very horrendous. And so the problem is at nighttime, there's no lights, and there's no way for the kids to be able to see security if there's scorpions or spiders or insects that might bite them too.
I had to grab fresh air outside in the courtyard. Paiman directs me towards a standalone small mud structure. When he opens the door, a shy middle-aged lady quickly covers her face with her headscarf and flinches away from the sudden sunlight.
This is Latifa. She's the resident bread master, but she makes the best bread in the world.
Salam.
After we are introduced, she comes out of the shadow and relaxes her scarf, revealing a soft smile.
She's been here for about 4 years with her kid Shah, who's her son.
From a small window covered with what looks like a potato sack comes the only light to break the complete darkness. In the middle of the room is a small pit where she bakes the bread. It does smell delicious. In Dari, Paiman asks her how she came to be in such a place.
So basically what happened was her husband used to beat her and abuse her a lot. And she went to the Ministry of Women's Affairs. And they actually placed her in custody here.
So she looks after the children as a motherly figure.
Yeah, it's her and her son, and she has a couple adopted kids underneath her as well, too.
Is she happy?
Yes, she is.
Despite the flicker of a shy smile, I felt there was much more to this mother and had to hold myself back from giving her a big hug. Once a month, the U.S. Army donated toys, clothing, and food to the kids, who would marvel over drawing pencils, which brought some color back into their lives. While disturbing, at best, I truly felt Paiman and Mirwais were doing what they could under incredibly stressed circumstances.
Kids need the money desperately.
But that money never came in. A year later, the government shut Kufa down and transferred the kids to a building on the grounds of Marastun, a government-funded hospital for the mentally disturbed. Thankfully, today, some of Afghanistan's 2 million orphans are getting more of the support they need.
When they grow up, they start working.
Afza Hossa is the assistant director of Marman Orphanage for Girls on the other side of Kabul. With the help of Canadian NGOs and the Canadian military, life at Marman is remarkably more comfortable. Yet life outside the orphanage can still be threatening for these 29 young girls.
See the windows I painted from outside?
Yes.
I don't want to see them here.
The boys to see in.
Yeah.
With no known family members to exact revenge, common in rural Afghan culture, these girls could be considered easier prey by those who would do no good, such as rapists, pimps, and child abductors. Yet as Afza tells us, even blood relatives can cause them harm.
Four girls got married already. And Najila, she doesn't have, like, her father passed away and her mother was off. She's crazy. And her aunt take her home and sell her to her neighbor. She's gone.
There is nothing Afza or the Afghan law can do if an extended family member wants the girl returned.
Sometimes I cry, like three sisters, Adela, Khalida, and Wajma. They were happy here. They were beautiful girls, and their father take them away from us. Still, these days, call me, and they say we are very in problem, in bad shape, and not good food, no school, nothing.
In Afghanistan, poverty can also drive living parents to send their children to an orphanage and take them back.
How much does it cost to marry off?
50,000 Afghani, which is $1,000.
That's it.
She wipes her hands across each other.
I keep telling them, you see 50,000 here, you don't see 2 million Afghani over there. When they grow up, they start working and they making a good money in salary and give it to you. They say, ooh, that is a long time. This is good. We need this money now.
Just down the street from Marman Orphanage are two other orphanages belonging to AFSICO, the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization. Through private donations and child sponsorship programs, the children here have the best chance of survival in Afghanistan's rough reality.
My name is Zainab.
What's your name?
My name is Masuda.
My name is
Fahim.
My name is
Nadia.
My name is
Khumari. My name is
Susan. Mehan Orphanage is home to roughly 40 girls from across the country. The boys live just around the corner at the Sitar Orphanage. Both facilities are very comfortable. The children's creative artwork lines the walls, along with powerful quotes from world icons. The children here have access to health care, go to school, play sports, and even learn music and dance.
We want more for children, not really just giving them food and that's all.
Afghans Jamshed and his wife Andisha Farid started and run AFSICO.
We have to make sure these grow like civilized human beings that could, you know, do some job for their own country.
Yet not all children here are orphans in the traditional sense.
Some are orphans, I mean, without parents or without one parent. Some are child laborers. Some are from poor backgrounds. Their family cannot afford to feed them.
Occasionally, some of the children with living parents will go home for a visit. I accompanied Jamshed as he escorted one of the girls, Pumba, back to a remote village in eastern Afghanistan's volatile Nangarhar province. Next to a tall wheat field, we found her house. Mud bricks and slabs of wood roughly stacked on top of each other cordoned off the space they called home. The family's livestock live in and amongst them. Pumba's mum, dad, sisters, brothers, and extended family all came to greet us.
We got 1, 2, 3 more rooms and the entire family live here. The uncle and her father and mother and the children, so all in this house.
Pumba's mother is only 26 years old, but already has 5 children. Jamshed asks her why she sent her child away to live in an orphanage. School, she quickly replies. He asks the father too, a man clearly twice as old as his wife.
I mean, if she was here, see, she could be simply an uneducated woman, like other children.
Other village kids quickly learn of Pumba's return and show up at the house. They hover all around her, asking question after question about life in the big city.
They are still young, but I'm sure they have this wish. They could be like her, to be in the orphanage or into any school or going somewhere, not to stay the whole life in this village. But I'm sure when she grows up and she's like a doctor or engineer, all of them will respect them more than that, and she could be a good leader for that. So one person could, you know, change the entire, you know, community. I'm sure she could change that in the whole community.
Before departing, a gang of village elders stops Jamshed.
Yeah, they're not letting me go and say, take my child along. I mean, everybody greets me here and then they ask me, what about my child? You know, when her turn will come to be in the orphanage. So she said, okay, now it's 2 years, you know, I'm just waiting. So I said, okay, maybe I'll try to find a sponsor for them, hopefully.
Back at Mehan Orphanage in Kabul, Khadija, a 10-year-old from Nuristan province, greets us at the door in floods of tears. Her parents left her there 4 years ago because she is deaf and they couldn't afford any treatment. Khadija's minder, another orphan not that much older, tells us why she's crying.
She was crying because her family was supposed to be here at 3 o'clock, but they didn't come. Her family, they always were telling us that they don't have enough money and that they wanted us to pay them. But we actually accepted like them to come and we're going to pay them, but they didn't still.
Khadija had been waiting anxiously at the door for hours. It's clear that Afghanistan's problems are not just physical, but also psychological. These children, most forgotten not only by society, but their own families, are the future of this country. Yet today appears to be all that matters to those who could really help. In Nangarhar, I spoke to Muhammad Akbal, the head of the provincial education system. I'll never forget what he said.
There are a lot of psychological problems normally in Afghan kids, and more seriously in the orphans. They are the most abandoned part of our society. They are the most deprived part of our societies. They have never seen a sympathetic response to their needs. So if they were left in the same situation as it is, the day will come that they will be the most reactionary, they will be the most revengeful part of our country. And it will disturb our country and, of course, the others.
Natalie Carney for DW in Kabul, Afghanistan.